Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands for the super athletic stuff, like running gear for cruising up the trail.
Woo!
And the super athlete-ish stuff, like fishing gear for chilling by the creek. Nice cast. Fitness apparel to push for higher reps. You got this. And golf balls priced so you can afford to lose one. Or a few. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athlete-ish, Sierra's got it.
Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and today on the show, we're doing another one of my listener mailbag episodes where I answer a bunch of questions submitted by you guys on social media over the past week. I have a ton of questions that I'm answering today about the current shows, about some of the shows that are coming, about Housewives in general, some other things towards the end. It's a really good mix, so I hope you enjoy this. I love getting these questions. I love doing these and really seeing what's on your guys' mind. So let's just jump into it. So the first one is from CL Dinsdale on Twitter. He asks, why is the Bravo schedule so slow now? Why do you think they moved Miami to Thursday? And Peter Rocha also asked that on Instagram. Why do you think Bravo moved Miami to the same night as OC and left Wednesday with nothing? So I don't know. That's one of the more baffling decisions programming-wise in recent memory from Bravo. I mean, there's a few options that I can think about. Like, maybe they wanted to give Miami a stronger lead-in right now behind OC and sort of boost those live ratings a little bit, because even though they've, you know, maintained that the streaming numbers are very strong, the live numbers are not. So maybe that's one of the reasons. They're the only two Housewives on right now. It's a very quiet schedule, as they said. Maybe it's to make space for Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, but also, like, that's so premature. It's still not on for another couple weeks. So I don't think that really tracks. I do think it's going to be a busier fall for Bravo, but, like, again, we're in August, so why are we doing that now? I really don't have an answer for you. I wish I knew. It's very confusing and lopsided right now. And it's like, I personally don't mind a quieter August, but at the same time, not only is it a head scratcher, but I also think that Thursday is, like, the worst night for them to stack it, because, like, in the summer, people are so much more likely to have plans on Thursday than they are on, like, Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. So, like, I'm not watching live on Thursdays most of the time. I'm usually watching on Friday mornings on Peacock, or ahead of time if I have to do interviews or something like that. And them airing on Thursday also makes it harder for me to talk about on the podcast in a timely manner. So, really unusual, confusing decision. I wish I had an answer for you. I don't, but I'm right there with you in terms of wondering why. CL Dinsdale also asked on Twitter, what do you think about Todd's latest social media post? So I posted that I have no interest in watching his 10-minute video, but I did hear from a friend who did watch it. And I, you know, obviously saw some quotes and some clips and things like that, but I'm not going to sit down and watch that 10-minute video because I don't trust Todd. I think there is probably some truth into what he's saying about how things have gone down behind the scenes, but I don't know. I just don't. There's something about him in the way that, like, he was so down for the fame that came with dating Alexia the first season he was around. But then when he saw how the season went and how he was edited and how he came across, he all of a sudden rejected the show. He refused to be involved with the show because he wanted to control it. And then he was making those weird videos, you know, apologizing to Anthony. And he's still been using the show for clout on social media. So I just, like, I take it with a grain of salt. Again, there are some really interesting tidbits in what he was saying. You know, like, he talked about how, or he claimed that he pushed for Alexia's sons to be paid by production to appear on the show. And he said that he negotiated that. So that's a really interesting detail. And, you know, that would obviously only be when they appear on the show, though. So, like, they don't appear that often these days. But I think that I found that to be interesting. But ultimately, like, I support Alexia for choosing the show and thus her career over Todd. Sorry, like, I just think that I'm so happy that she chose that over him. Like, she had said that she would potentially leave the show for him. That would not have been smart, clearly. So I'm glad that she made that correct decision, and he just seems butthurt over that. But yeah, I'm team Alexia on this one 100%, but there were some interesting tidbits in that video for sure. I'm not gonna sit down and watch the whole thing. Patrick Duncan on Twitter, do you think Marisol and Alexia can weather the storm of Todd and Alexia's reconciliation and breakup cycle? Things were tense between them in the after show. Are they good as gold or headed for the Tamra, Vicky, or Vanderpump Kyle storyline? So I do think they can weather the storm, because I believe Todd when he says that he's fully done with Alexia. So I don't think it's going to be an issue for them going forward. So if they weathered it thus far, I feel like we're past the point of Alexia sort of being the most in danger of giving Todd a chance and really kind of getting back with him. I kind of feel like the ship has sailed. And I feel like they did have that slight friendship fissure like a couple of seasons ago, I want to say, but it wasn't a huge deal and they got through it pretty easily. And I don't foresee them going against one another in a big way. I really don't. Unless, and this is the one sort of situation that I could see it potentially maybe happening in, is if, you know, if Marisol wants that mojito so badly as Adriana told me in our interview that she wants it, she could make a last ditch play to get one in a season or two by turning on Alexia. Because that would be the central storyline of the season. It would be a huge shocker. I think they would almost have like no choice but to upgrade her. You know what I mean? But even saying that, I'm just sort of like, it sounds really implausible and I don't really see that happening. But I think that if it did happen, that would be the context that it would happen in. Peter Roca also asked on Instagram, do you think that Julia has always been like this and we just didn't see it? Or has she changed? You know, that's an interesting question because I've been really thinking that she's changed a lot. I do think I maintain that. But now that I sort of really sit with this question, you know, she snagged Martina Navratilova as her wife. I don't really remember the exact story of how they met and how they got together. But, you know, obviously Julia's lifestyle and sort of her financial situation, I'm sure, was completely upgraded and very much solidified when she got with Martina. And I'm not saying she got with her for those reasons, but to get to that point, you have to have a little bit of savvy, a little bit of a social climby, you know, way about you, I would say. And so that I think there's actually no shame in that. You know, on the surface, it's like, you know, everyone wants to get ahead. And if you're good at that, then like more power to you. Use those tools at your disposal. But, you know, she's kind of displaying some of those qualities this season. People have called her a social climber. People think that she's saddling up to the cool girls, you know, for power. That's what, you know, various of the Miami women who have interviewed this season have told me as much. And I think a lot of fans believe that. But like, it's now I think back to where she was when she first joined the show. And she seemed to me like really settled into her life, really settled in herself. You know, she seemed to enjoy sort of being like the oddball out. And I feel like she was pretty unapologetic about how different she was from the rest of the women. Like Miami is a glitzy, sexy city. And Julia is not a glitzy person who dresses sexy. Like she was, you know, milking the goats, wearing jeans to everything. Like that was who she was. And now obviously she's, you know, doing much more glam. She's dressing in, you know, sexier outfits. And so it really does feel like she's assimilating at all costs. So I think that in that way, sort of in very superficial ways, she has changed a lot. And I think within the context of the show, what she cares about has changed. She's a little more ruthless about how she wants to get what she wants. And I think inevitably that bleeds out into your life, right? Like, you know, your life happenings are your storylines, not all of them and not exclusively, but, you know, her adopting those kids, I think some people think that the show has maybe impacted that decision. I don't know what I think about it. I think it's admirable to adopt those children, but something about like the scenes of them filming feels a little bit off sometimes. And I think that there's something to be said about the daughters not speaking to them because of the adoption. Like, I think that tells you a lot. So anyway, I think I'm going to stick with the idea that she has changed, but I think that there's totally a possibility that she's always sort of had this quality in her, but it's just been dormant for a while. And it woke up more and more sort of as the seasons have gone on for her. And it's really the first time we're seeing it in a big way on the show. Fill It Up on Instagram asks, discuss how Jen from OC is the best newer housewife that nobody talks about. She's giving old school. Totally agree. I feel like I've been giving Jen her flowers for the past several years. I think that she's a phenomenal housewife. I think she's one of the best additions in recent years across any franchise, hands down. As you said, like she's quintessential old school OC vibe, but she can also exist really naturally in this sort of more new school environment. And I watch her and I'm just like, damn, like I think she's one of the most likable on all of OC, if not the most likable right now for me. She's not afraid of Tamara, which is easier said than done. And she digs her heels in a way that's really admirable to me. I think I think back to them in London last season and Jen storming up to Tamara's room and just launching into Tamara. That was a big moment for her. And I feel like that sort of unlocked something in her in terms of like her instincts on Housewives. And the other moment I think about, and I think I've mentioned this before, is last reunion when she like kind of out of nowhere was like, well, to Emily, she was like, well, your parents fund your whole life. And you've said that before. That was a really good pull on her part. It was pretty, I mean, it was a pretty, it kind of like took the air out of the room. And I just remember that really well. And again, it felt like that's very housewivesy to like hit somebody with something that they have said before. People kind of have forgotten that she's admitted to that. And it kind of hit her where it hurt. And I think that that is sometimes what you have to do as a housewife. And so I just really think that Jen is in it for the long haul. She weathered the storm of the Ryan stuff last season. And I think that that actually strengthened her, honestly. All right. Fill It Up also asks, why would Tamara bring up the roofied thing if it only makes her look worse and it brings up the past? And then similarly, Ryan Stoneman on Instagram asks, do you think that Gretchen really told Katie the rumor about Tamara, or did Katie make it up? All right. So I really keep going back and forth on what I think happened here. I do agree with the idea that Tamara bringing it up herself makes little sense on the surface. You know what I mean? It's like, why would a person bring up on camera for the first time that she's being accused behind the scenes of roofying somebody years ago? Like what does she have to gain from that? But then maybe if you think a little bit deeper about it, did Tamara want to get ahead of Gretchen potentially bringing up the naked wasted thing at some point in her first season back? Because I mean, you know, Gretchen's whole, you know, intro to the show has been sort of centered around her beef with Tamara. So inevitably their past is going to be brought up in a bigger way. And that naked wasted thing is, you know, it's a famous event. It's a famous scene and a famous happening from OC. So like it was probably likely going to be brought up anyway. And so I think that maybe you could argue that this could be Tamara getting ahead of it and kind of planting that seed to make Gretchen look bad, to sort of flip it on her and get ahead of it. It's a possibility for sure. Like, to me, there are so many options here. It's like, maybe Gretchen did tell Katie this and Gretchen's lying about telling her. She's saying that she didn't tell her this. Or maybe Katie made it up or misinterpreted something that Gretchen did say about that and then she repeated it wrong. Maybe Tamara made the whole thing up after seeing Katie meet up with Kiki Monique and it kind of planted the seed in her head for Gretchen coming back to the show. All three of those things, to be honest, I could see being the truth. And so it's really hard to, I think I flip back and forth between them. And I think Kiki Monique, I think I saw that she posted that she's going to go live on Instagram on Friday afternoon. I saw some Q&A that she did. And Kiki is a friend of the pod. I know Kiki pretty well. So I think that hopefully her going live could give us some more context. Because again, like because I feel like Tamara's saying somebody in the press alerted me that Katie was saying this to Kiki. But like, I don't think she said that she got this directly from Kiki. So like somebody, did Kiki repeat it to somebody else? Like to me, it's giving like a fucked up game of telephone. And I don't know where it went wrong. You know what I mean? Did it start with Gretchen? Did it start at the beginning? Did Gretchen come out and say, yeah, I think Tamara actually roofied me back in the day? Or was it Katie? Or was it Kiki? Or was it this other person in the press? Or was it Tamara? To me, any link in that chain of telephone, things can be repeated wrong or misinterpreted, or, you know, conclusions can be made. So I don't really know, but I think that my gut is that Gretchen did tell Katie something about the naked wasted thing. And maybe she implied it and didn't outright say it. Like maybe people are not technically lying about this. There's sort of a technicality in there. Maybe Gretchen didn't actually say it outright, but she implied it. Because I just don't, I'll get into Katie in a second, but like, I just don't know if she would full on make this up out of the blue. I believe that she's chatting with all these bloggers. And again, I'll get into that. And I believe that she got in too deep there. But I don't know if she would flat out make this up out of thin air. She seems pretty adamant about it. And I think I believe her. David Van Hooser on Instagram. Thoughts on the Katie takedown on OC. Is this going to go on all season? Hopefully not. I think it's getting a little tired. But again, it is kind of a mess of her own making. So like, it's tired for a reason, I guess. And I get why the other women don't find her trustworthy. And by the way, I wanted to touch on this for a second. Heather Dubrow, as I mentioned on the podcast last week, she hosted this like media press day, basically, which she does every single year out in the open. It's not secret. Every housewife has press days. They just look a little different than hers. Usually they're bopping around, but Heather just kind of stays in one place. And after content got put up from that, and I think after it was talked about on Dylan Hafer's podcast, mentioned it all for Betches, because he was also there. He's a friend of the pod as well. I saw some clips being passed around on social media of that, and people are like, oh, okay, so, you know, they're criticizing Katie for talking to bloggers, but Heather's out here talking to bloggers too and hosting a fabulous event for them and wining and dining them. And it's like, what Katie is being accused of doing and what Heather is doing out in the open are very different. Heather hosted a press day. It was no secret. It's meant to be shared. It's meant to be known about. It's meant to be known. We're meant to publish interviews from it or talk about it. That's the point of it. That's the point of a press day, and they all do them. What Katie's accused of doing is secretly talking to Instagram pages and podcasters, bloggers, quote unquote.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
And then lying about it, or, you know, spreading information to them and trying to control the narrative that way. Those are two very different things. I just need to say, equating those two things, it's giving you don't know really know how this all works, but like, that's how it works. And that it's not sketchy or weird that Heather is having a press day while accusing Katie of secretly colluding with Instagram fan pages. Those are very different things. All right, four questions about this. IB Julie P on Instagram, what is the way forward for OC? They're too in the weeds with the blogger bullshit. Delray Gabe on Instagram, is there a world in which Katie can secure another season? Stella Grimares on Threads, do you think we need cast changes on RHOC? And then Sarah Lemke on Instagram, Tamara is the worst, can we get rid of her? So all of these kind of have to do with the future of OC, the standing of the cast. I agree. Again, too much blogger drama, not enough drama actually among the women over something that one of them did to one to the other one. Like, this, there's too much reliance on this same kind of drama. Like, how many times are we going to be like, oh, Katie, I heard you were talking to this person, and then Katie denies it. And we're going in circles. You know what I mean? And it's been like three or four times at this point. I'm not against the idea of having one moment of that in a season, but having it back to back to back to back to back, all about the same person, it's a lot. And it's too much. And it just, you know, I'm all for them breaking the fourth wall a little bit and acknowledging, you know, their public platforms. But this is too much of that, in my opinion. Because also something else has to be happening. It has to be balanced out. That's like all that's going on between them. It's just too much. It's too much. And to me, it is very clear that Katie engaged way too much with creators and podcasters and such around the show toward, you know, around her first season. And, you know, I think she was trying to control the narrative and provide information. And I think that's how she thought things were done. You know, she probably saw other people doing it or heard maybe that's how it works. Or she just kind of got excited because she has watched the show and she likes the fan pages already. Like, I mean, her message to Kiki felt like sort of like that. Because as I think Kiki Monique posted receipts of Katie reaching out to her. So I think that she was in over her head. That's how she thought it worked. And I get that. But I just don't love that she has not really owned it in a bigger way. And also, if, as you know, a lot of people online seem to think, and if, as I think she's maybe implied, everybody does this where everyone talks to bloggers, give us some proof. Tell me that you know that Gina is messaging this person, or Heather messages this person, or Tamara always talks to this one other person. I need that. I need some like substantial evidence of that, because I do believe it. I do believe a lot of the housewives correspond with people because people correspond with me. But I need some actual evidence on the other side of that. And that's where I'm like, Katie, I need you to like stand up for yourself more. I need you to like put up more of a fight in these moments. Cause otherwise, like as I said about Jen, like she sticks up for herself. Like she doesn't really back down. And I feel like Katie's backing down too much. And when she's kind of flustered, it sort of almost reminds me of like West on Summer House. They sort of like shut down. And I need people to like really stand up for themselves and push through the hesitancy to back themselves up. Cause I do feel badly for her. And I do think that she's a great, and she's a lot going for her, but this is just a mess of her own making. And I think when you play with fire and Tamara Judge is in the room, you're going to get burned. But speaking of, I mean, going up to the question about, you know, can she come back? Her and Tamara seem to be good. Tamara sent Katie flowers when she was on Watch What Happens Live earlier this season. And so I kind of feel like Tamara is sort of looping back around. I think she's maybe reading the room from the audience because a lot of people are on Katie's side and a lot of people are not on her side. And so I think she's kind of trying to turn the tables, befriending her and maybe setting her up to still have a connection to the group. Because it seems like Katie and Jen aren't on good terms. And obviously Tamara and Jen aren't. So maybe this is sort of Tamara's in to sort of keep Katie around. I don't know. That's sort of my hunch though. And so I do really think that the door is still open for Katie, but I also think that she needs to have a good reunion and a substantial ally on the cast. And what a fucking plot twist it would be if that ally was Tamara Judge. And honestly, for the questions about like, you know, what's the way forward for OC? I think the cast is great. I have honestly no complaints about this cast. I think it's well-balanced. I think that everybody serves a purpose. I'm sure there's a lot of people that disagree with that, but even Gina and Emily, I think that they kind of can like be allied with anybody. They pass information around. I think that they know how this works. And sometimes, you know, they try too hard, just like any other housewife, but I do not have the same problems with them that a lot of people seem to have. So I love this cast. I just think the production needs to make sure that the storylines among them next season and going forward are not as reliant on these outside sources and call so much attention to them being public figures. I think that's where they're losing it. And that's where it becomes really annoying. Because at the end of the day, if you think about it, you know, the quote unquote bloggers or Instagram pages and podcasters, people get really fed up with that kind of drama on these shows, which I think is interesting because it's essentially just replaced the tabloids and Page Six, which they always used to talk about. They talked about the press since the beginning of time on these shows. It was an extra character on Roni. And Atlanta's been talking about the blog since the beginning. Potomac talks about the blogs. Like that, the sort of press, you know, ecosystem has always been, you know, played a part on Housewives. But I think there is less tolerance for the online, you know, podcasty type press. And I don't know if it's because it's like less legitimate, obviously, like it's not like big journalistic institutions, but it still serves the same role. But I think they need to know that like the audience doesn't want to see a million podcast clips. They don't want to see everything starting on Jeff Lewis Live. They don't want to see everything starting on Instagram DMs with a fan page. Like one thing can start there. It can be part of a season, but it's just too much of that. And, but yeah, I do think just like go back to the basics, have some good old fashioned drama on the cast, because I do believe in pretty much everyone being there. And I think the balance is there to deliver good TV. Chris Scott on Instagram: have you watched The Real Housewives of London? Thoughts on the premiere? If you follow me on social media, you know that I have watched The Real Housewives of London and I made a big long video about it. Some people were commenting like, get to the point, but I wanted to give context over why The Real Housewives of London is not available in the US to sort of officially stream. But TLDR, I watched by downloading and paying for ExpressVPN, which makes your computer think that you're in the UK or anywhere else you want to put it. And then I made an account on HeyU, which is the international streaming service of Bravo. They're producing Real Housewives of London. It is available there. There's also an after show. It costs money, $12 each a month, I believe. To me, it's worth it. I think there are free ways to watch. I've heard it's on Dailymotion. I've heard it's on YouTube and other places. I personally don't want to go searching around for every episode every single week. I want to know that I have access to them every week. And so that's how I got it. If you want the hot tip, ExpressVPN and then make a HeyU account and pay for both. All right. The premiere. I thought it was really good. I really liked it. Like, it wasn't the most dramatic episode, and it basically just kind of serves as an introduction to all of the women. And the biggest drama is, you know, there's an International Women's Day party at the end of the episode hosted by one of them at their house. And one of them calls the other out about talking shit about her to the dentist, and also calls her off for borrowing clothing and then like not crediting enough or something. That's the petty drama. That's the biggest drama. So it's not some big kind of explosive premiere. But I don't think a premiere needs to be that. I think a series premiere should introduce you to the characters, establish their connections with one another, establish their bona fides in terms of, you know, wealth and, you know, place in society and their background. And I think I got all of that from this. And the show seems to me to be very well cast. I think it gave them solid intros. I felt like I was watching real money, women who more or less like actually seem connected to one another through high society and friendships that have come from that. And like, even if they're not all actually legitimate in high society, like, which is probably accurate because I think it's hard to get people in England who are part of high society to sign up for a reality show. To me, it felt that way, which is more important. Like, it felt like these were legit women, and I'm down for that. I don't care if they're not technically aristocrats or whatever. But yeah, so like, there's this woman, Amanda, who sort of is the first one we're introduced to, and she has this sort of like Daily Mail ripped from the headlines appeal. She used to date one of the guys from Wham. She had like a big contentious divorce that played out in the press, I think. And then her and Juliet Angus, who is the one from Ladies of London. She was one of the Americans on Ladies of London who was still very good friends with Caroline Stanberry. She has not joined the show yet. She joins several episodes in because of contract negotiations. So she's not on the premiere. But her and Juliet used to be friends. And from all the previews, it looked like they're going to like go at each other. And it looks like really good TV. I will say, a little birdie told me that Juliet's entrance, whenever it happens, is kind of iconic. That's what I was told. Panthea, I'm undecided on whether it's like too put on or not, but I like the energy from her. Nessie is super smart and accomplished, and she has a gorgeous countryside estate. Like, it's huge property that we saw a picture of in the premiere. Good vibes from her. There's another Juliet she's the one who gets accused of borrowing clothing and shit talking dentists. Again, seems very connected to everybody. And then Karen, I guess she was on Real Housewives of Jersey, which was one of the South Africa ones. I didn't watch that. But she seems to have real money and a great sense of humor. So I'm down. They all have nice houses. Like, I think it was really solid. It's very promising. And it made me really excited for this first season of The Real Housewives of London. Carlos J. Harris on Twitter. Do you think it's best if Kyle took off two seasons in order for Real Housewives of Beverly Hills to evolve? I feel like she is holding back the show's progression. Maybe casting Rachel Zoe as a soft launch into the next phase of Beverly Hills. She can be the anchor post Kyle. So I was talking a lot about this at the end of last season. I am a Kyle fan. I don't get all the criticism about her, but I do think that a season off this year could have done her wonders. Like, figure some stuff out in her life, get some time away from the cameras for the first time in 15 years. And then you come back and like, you've made some big decisions in your life. You've had some perspective, and I think fans would receive her better. Nothing like some time away for fans to really get perspective on somebody that they're down on as a housewife, truly. I mean, look at Rinna. I feel like everybody like wants Rinna back, and it's like, people hated her when she left. But, you know, I do feel like it's been a little bit stagnant from Kyle, so I think a season off would have really been good for her. Again, it doesn't bother me as much as other viewers, but I totally get why it does. And I think it only can hold the other women back if they let it, you know, like challenge her more, you know? But I feel like maybe that's the Beverly Hills problem, is like, there's just too much of like a vault kind of thing. There's too much of like a we don't go there and don't challenge the queen. So I see what you're saying for sure. And I think it's too soon to say if Rachel Zoe has it in her to anchor the show. But if she works, if she shows out this season, I would love to see more of her friends brought into the mix, because they're genuinely famous. She's so well connected. And I think, you know, yeah, the anchor of Rachel Zoe being an anchor of Beverly Hills is really an exciting prospect for sure. Xavier Andrews on Threads, which premiere do you think we'll see first? Real Housewives of New York season 16 or Real Housewives of New Jersey season 15? And if you had to guess, what is the specific decision you think the network regrets making most for each of the two franchises? Oh, that's such a good question. I think that we'll see Real Housewives of New York season 16 first. I feel like In the past couple of weeks, all signs have like pointed to them heavily casting. There's definitely outreach happening. The Page Six items about it keep popping up. You know, the latest was that Martha Stewart's go-to makeup artist was approached for it. So I think there's definitely, to me, that points to there being movement and conversation actively happening behind the scenes. So maybe they announce it at BravoCon or going into BravoCon. I could see that happening. I mean, I could also see a jersey announcement happening at BravoCon though too. So I don't know. But I would venture the guess also that the network has to have regret about how the Roni of it all rolled out. I feel like the horse got before the carriage. I think they should have announced Legacy Roni first with a locked in cast and then announced the reboot and unveiled that cast. I think it would have been much more warmly received and basically just a bonus Real Housewives if we knew, okay, yeah, we're still getting a show with Dorinda, Luann, you know, maybe Ramona, Sonia, maybe Jill, maybe Heather, maybe Kristen, whoever it would have been. We would have like that anxiety would have been alleviated. And then it's like, you're also getting these new women. And I think that would have been like, all right, yeah, well, let's watch the new women too. You know what I mean? Or if you didn't want to, you could still watch the Legacy. But I think that it would have been so much less of a controversy. And obviously, like, it was a very rough, you know, rollout of even just the girls' trip that we got from Roni. And I also think that the pressure on the newer women would have been so much less if they were like, all right, the fans are still going to have Sonia and Luann and Dorinda on their screens. That would not have had to have been part of their press cycle. Like, I feel like every interview they did, it was like, don't worry, we're not trying to replace them. Like, that was a talking point. And so that's what I think where the biggest regret is. I think that was just, I've always sort of said, I just think that was not, the order of operations there was fucked up, I think. And then with Jersey, I couldn't think of like a specific decision that I think they would regret. I mean, I enjoyed Jersey that last season. I enjoyed it until its pause. The finale was iconic and epic. I think that last season was actually pretty good. And I don't care what anybody else says about it being too dark or whatever. I don't think that. Yeah, I understand the Teresa and Melissa coexisting wasn't going to be sustainable and work out, but I liked that last season. So if I'm thinking about like an actual decision that the network thinks they regret, I mean, maybe it's not forcing Teresa and Melissa to figure out how to coexist earlier. Maybe it's not letting one of them go earlier before it got, you know, so quote unquote toxic. Maybe it's, I think that, you know, I think in some ways it's good that the network after this past season was like, we're taking a very long break. But I think that also maybe gave them too much slack. You know what I mean? So it's good because there was less pressure for them to turn things around quickly. But I also think that now it's like, all right, it's been a long time. You know what I mean? And like they did, and they can't cancel it because it's like they said that they keep on implying it's going to come back. So those are my thoughts there, but I think that's a really good question, truly. Reality Shiz on Twitter, I'd love for you to explain further why you believe every franchise needs an OG. We've seen Housewives franchises tank because they kept the OG, New Jersey, and we've seen others thrive without them, OC. Wouldn't it make sense for an OG to be cut if they haven't evolved for the show? So this is based on Real Housewives polls on Twitter posted something about like, do you think that every Housewife franchise should have an OG? And I quoted it and I was like, yeah, I think that every franchise should have an OG or a quasi-OG to maintain a connection to the show's origins. And I need to clarify, I use the term OG more broadly. Like, I know that technically it just means a first season housewife. And so other people would call like a season two or three person joining a vet. So a vet, a quasi-OG, an OG, I think it just, to me, that implies people who were there since the beginning, around the beginning. So to me, Tamra is an honorary quasi-OG because she joined so early in the show's run and she represents that continued connection to Gretchen coming back, to Alexis coming back, to Vicky making appearances. She's why that makes sense. Same with Heather and in a way too. So I would even throw someone like Dorinda in that category. Like if Roni had existed with just Dorinda as sort of like the tie to the original run of the show, that to me like makes her a quasi-OG because she's connected to that original run. You know, I think it's necessary. I maintain this because I think it's comforting. I think that you have to just have this connection to the origins that keeps the story going. And it also means you can always bring somebody back and have it be plausible and believable because, you know, somebody who they used to be quote unquote friends with is still there. And, you know, I think that we saw, I mean, like Roni is the only one that has rebooted fully without a connection to the original run of the show and it's been flopping. So I think it's really important. I think that, you know, speaking to the idea that OC has thrived without them, again, I think that I consider Tamra to be quasi Ochi, even though she joined not in season three. Even though she didn't join in season one, she represents that. And, you know, Teresa, Kyle, Nini, like, they are definitely cautionary tales about maybe people overstaying their welcome or becoming too big for the show or bigger than the show and thinking that is their show. But also, I think that could have been resolved by just having them take a season off, you know, tell Kyle to take a season off, take Teresa to take a season off, show them what it's like without the show, give them perspective, yada, yada, yada. I think things could have gone differently there. And then also, like, I'm sort of like, how much do you want the show to evolve away from its origins? Because, again, we see what happened with Roni when it evolved too much away from the origins and it didn't work. And so I think that as we've seen with Atlanta, as we've seen with OC, to a lesser extent, Potomac, that is how you evolve a show while also maintaining a connection to its origins, maintaining its DNA, keeping people around, adding former people, but also adding new people. That's the inflection point, and that's what works in my mind. Joe Lee on Instagram, why hasn't Peacock announced another season of Ultimate Girls Trip? Is it because of the lawsuit? That would be my guess. Your guess is as good as mine, but that is a good direction to take that in. It's either that or that Peacock just doesn't have the budget allocated for Bravo programming anymore. I think that Peacock, I listened to this podcast, The Town with Matt Bellamy, which is very sort of like insider baseball-y about Hollywood and streaming and all that kind of stuff. And he talks a lot about how important sports are to all these streamers. And Peacock has spent a lot of money on sports, and sports are expensive. So I think a lot of the Peacock money goes into getting sports rights. And I think that leaves a lot less for, you know, developing new Bravo shows for Peacock. And also Love Island is also, you know, it's unscripted, but it's still a big production and it's much more popular. So I think it's a programming thing too, but I miss it. I think that Ultimate Girls Trip was so fucking fun. I would have taken 25 iterations of that and been so happy. And so I think it's a loss not to have that for sure. Allie Leitner on Instagram. Any tea on how Summer House is going? Do we know if Lindsay has made an appearance? So I think it's safe to say, even just based on Lindsay's social media, that she definitely has made appearances on this upcoming season 10 of Summer House. She's gone out to the Hamptons at least once, maybe twice. It's hard to tell exactly how much she's involved when she's out there, because I've also seen her staying with Aaron from Roni because they've become good friends. So it's hard to tell exactly what she's going to be doing when she's there, but she's definitely making appearances. And as I said on a previous episode, I went to her housewarming party at her apartment a couple weeks ago at this point, and it was filmed. So yeah, I can say that most of the cast was there. I didn't really get a good sense of what the dynamic was, but it was really interesting to watch, and it was being filmed. So Lindsay will definitely be on season 10 of Summer House. Elena Lovholm on Threads. With the rumors about Summer House spinoff with Lindsay, Paige, etc., what would be your dream cast for the show? And do you think that Lindsay is actually the one putting the rumors out there? LOL. So Paige is not going to be on it. She would be on my dream cast, but I think all signs point to Paige taking some time away from reality TV. And by some time, I mean a few years at least. That's my hunch about sort of Paige's, what Paige cares about in her career and what her priorities are right now. It's definitely not doing reality TV. I think she needs time away. She's had a couple months away only at this point. And I think that Lindsay, I think that it's going to be a lot of new friends. I think it's going to be a lot of people we don't know on the show. But I'm really curious to see if anybody or who from Summer House is going to make that jump theoretically over to this potential new show that we've all been asking for, by the way. I would love if it was like a backdoor pilot, like the end of Summer House season 10, leads directly into a new spinoff centered around a friend group in the city. I would love if like Kyle and Amanda were on there. I would love if the other ones made appearances, but they weren't full-time cast members. It should give the Valley for New York. Lindsay leading it is a great choice if that's happening. And I just foresee it being like the Valley where we introduce a lot of new people. All right. Disrunner K on Instagram asks a very long question. I'm curious your thoughts on the ideal balance of Bravo shows between darker reality themes, i.e. The Valley, and overly produced / self-protective reality, i.e. Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. I appreciated the realness of The Valley this season, even though it was uncomfortable to see the domestic violence and addiction themes play out on camera. I know some Bravo lovers decided to turn off The Valley because it was too dark this season, but comparing it to something like Beverly Hills, which IMO hasn't had many, quote, real or raw stories in the last several seasons, I'd rather have something like The Valley that at least feels like It's addressing some of what the cast members are really dealing with in their lives. It feels like the Bravo shows may shift towards more of a heavily produced vibe, but less real stories like Beverly Hills in response to viewers being upset by the darkness of the valley this season. And of course, I ask this with a nod to the reality that all of these shows are overly produced to a certain extent. I just have concerns that Bravo's takeaway from the last season of The Valley will be that viewers just want glamour, glitz, and small, petty conflicts. First of all, very well said, and I agree with a lot of what you're saying. I think that's a really good point. I hadn't really thought about it that way. And I do think that for The Valley, I agree. I think that in a lot of ways, the realness of The Valley is refreshing. It stands out, and it's needed in the Bravo landscape. My issue with The Valley had to do with Jax in particular. So I think taking him out of the equation, and we know that he's not going to be there next season, I think that can solve a lot of their problems. They could still talk about a lot of these real issues that face their relationships and their group talks about, but they just won't be as dark with the Jax stuff. I still think they can be very real. I think this group feels sort of like they are sort of compulsively honest and they're going to share whatever's going on. So I still have faith in that regard with them, and the darkness problem could just be solved with Jax. I do hear your fears about an overcorrection on production, so I hope that doesn't happen. I think my main complaint, and I said it at the end of my end of season deep dive episode for The Valley last week, I actually didn't have as much of a problem with the actual dark themes that were explored on the show. It's more that they just weren't balanced out with any humor or any lightness. It's when it's all dark to me is the problem. I'm totally cool with them exploring those ideas and those storylines on the show because, again, as you said, they are real. They're important to discuss, honestly. They're a way to help Brittany kind of get out of that situation too. So I'm glad we talked about them, and I'm glad that she brought them up and felt comfortable doing so. I need something else going on. I need another vibe to balance it out. It just felt like an onslaught, and that to me is where they went wrong. So yeah, just incorporate more humor in it. But I agree, don't just go fully over into petty conflict and abandon the realness that sort of is intrinsic to The Valley, because it is compelling TV for sure, and it's important to maintain that as part of its DNA. All right, my friend Maggie on Instagram, what's one Bravo conspiracy theory or secret that you'd love to know the truth about? I mean, there's so many behind the scenes little things that I would like love to know about. I feel like the biggest one from recent years in terms of conspiracy theories, I mean, I guess it's Dorit's robbery, because I don't think that she knew about it. I don't think that, you know, I think Garcelle handled bringing that up incorrectly when she brought it up on the show. And maybe she should never have brought it up on the show. But there's definitely a lot of interesting points that have been brought up about that. I don't think that she was in on some master plan, but there was always like something weird about it. And I don't know what that means, but there's a lot of conspiracy theories as they relate to that robbery. And yeah, I think that's the biggest one from the past couple of years. I think one of the recent things that's been popped up that I would love to know more about and the truth about is Bethany said recently that when she came back to Roni, one of the stipulations was that she was able to like control a lot of production in terms of when she filmed, what was included, call times, her salary, all these different things that would, if they were true, represent her getting very much preferential treatment from the network and from production. And, you know, it's unsubstantiated, but that's what she has said several times. And to me, I'd love to know the truth about that, because it really would inform that sort of amazing 4-5 season run that Roni had when she returned, and sort of the feeling that the other women had towards her, because they would have had whiffs of that for sure. And I think it would just explain a lot. So I would love to know more about that. And just like, I love the contract shit. That's why I loved when they brought it up on Secret Lives of Mormon Wives. So that's the kind of shit that I'm really interested in terms of secrets. I also would love to know, I do think we don't know the full story about like Monica Garcia, how she joined the show, maybe like when the Reality Von T stuff really came out. There's a lot of conspiracy around that, like whether Heather knew way earlier than she let on, or whether production knew, or how Monica even was introduced to the show. That's one of the biggest moments on Bravo in the past decade or ever. And I would love to get the full true story on that. Yeah, those are some ones that come to mind. But honestly, DM me if you have more, because I feel like there are probably more that I'm not thinking about. Ben Dieterly on Instagram, what makes a good housewife tagline? What is your housewife's tagline? Though to me, it's like, it has to be unapologetic with a wisp of snark or bitchiness, definitely some cockiness in there. Like, you're like, the point of them is to like show off and to like, you know, stake your ground. And so half of that is just like the delivery of it. And sometimes the women do not have good delivery of their Housewives taglines. My Housewives tagline is, you may be the word on the street, but I'm the talk of the town. So there you have it. For Rebecca on Instagram, many of Bravo subreddits have gotten so toxic that they are not fun to engage with anymore. Where can people go for post-episode discussion and lighthearted trash talking that aren't overrun by people super standing for individual cast members? I think there's nowhere that is completely free of that at this point. I don't really go on Reddit very much unless I'm researching for an interview. So I'm not active there. So I'm sorry to hear that it's turned into that. I do think that gets back to my point that Scandoval and sort of the really intense rallying around Ariana sort of changed the Bravo fandom forever. I think that treatment is kind of getting put on issues that are much smaller than that and less of a big deal, but they're being treated with the intensity of Scandoval. But I think that Threads is the closest place to what you want. I think it's generally way more respectful, but there is some snarkiness. I think there's less engagement overall, but there are definitely people there talking about it and engaging with it and discussing it. I think there's the what makes it different from Twitter too is that I do think it's like more of an open conversation there in terms of like, I think that some people come across as having no idea what they're talking about who talk about Bravo on Threads. And I think that's because it's more open for casual fans to weigh in because those things sort of surface more on Threads versus on Twitter. Because I think on Threads, people go by the sort of For You feed versus the chronological feed. It's definitely not as heated as Twitter. But I think Threads is maybe, try out Threads. It's a little bit more respectful and it's not as intense.
We heard you. 9 years of Bring Back the Snack Wrap and you've won. But maybe you should have asked for more. Say hello to the Hot Honey Snack Wrap. Now you've really won. Go to McDonald's and get it while you can.
This Valentine's Day, the UPS Store Certified Packing Experts are helping pack and ship all the ways we care. From the lovey-dovey XOXO gifts for your Galentine's gal pal, even pet gifts for doggy dearest. When you ship UPS Air at the UPS Store, your items arrive on time or your money back, guaranteed at no extra cost, exclusively at the UPS Store U.S. retail locations. Send your Valentine's on time at the UPS Store. Visit theupsstore.com/airguarantee for full details. Terms and conditions apply.
Well, the holidays have come and gone once again, but if you've forgotten to get that special someone in your life a gift, well, Mint Mobile is extending their holiday offer of half off unlimited wireless. So here's the idea. You get it now. You call it an early present for next year. What do you have to lose? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Limited time 50% off regular price for new customers. Upfront payment required. $45 for 3 months, $90 for 6 months, or $180 for 12-month plan. Taxes and fees extra. Speeds may slow after 50 gigabytes per month when network is busy. See terms.
Katie Bocher, how do you view your lane of Bravo commentator versus like Kiki Monique and other bloggers? I think he realizes that most people who do what I do and what Kiki Monique does and things like that, most of them have Bravo stars that they're in communication with, whether that's just over DM occasionally and reacting to their stories or commenting, to being actual friends. Like, that's a big spectrum, but I think that most fan accounts or bloggers or podcasters have people that they have been in contact with recently. And it makes sense. There's a lot of gray area in this. We aren't talking about hard news, and it's our work. And so naturally, like, we're going to make work friends. We're going to make work connections and, you know, try to maintain those connections because they are valuable to our careers. And I think it's a weird, unnatural thing where, like, these people are famous for their real lives. You know, they're real people, but they're sort of enhanced on the screens. And for me, like, I've interviewed some of these people upwards of like 5 or 10 times. I've interviewed almost, 100 housewives, hundreds of Bravo celebrity interviews overall. Like, I have spoken to some of these people a lot and I've known them for a long time. I'm going to strike up relationships with them. That's just how it works. That's the same across any industry where people do interviews like this. Same in the sports world. Like, that is a thing. And I don't think that it takes away from interviewing them or covering them. It's a hard line to sort of operate on because I have to share my opinion on this show because people want my opinion. And Twitter is really where I broke out, where I was sharing my opinion and live tweeting there. But I was also interviewing them and I still interview them. And so, you know, that can sometimes be in direct opposition. Those two things can be in direct opposition to one another. I know that sometimes it's really difficult for me to balance, honestly, and people want my perspective and then somehow want me to be completely, fully, always objective when I speak to Bravo celebrities, which is kind of impossible to do both fully. And so, yeah, sometimes I will hold back my opinion in some respects. Sometimes I'm not like the most, I'm not the most like hardline interviewer. Like that's not my interview style. I want it to be a more safe conversation. And that's, if you don't like that from me, then that's okay. I'm not for you. But I do hope that kind of all of what I do between the interviews and how I commentate on the shows has a bit of like an insidery element to my perspective, because sometimes I do feel like I am in so deep, like maybe too deep maybe, but that's, I do think people appreciate that from my perspective. So I see that maybe as my lane. And again, I do my best and I think I do a pretty good job at being able to talk about them and also talk to them. I don't always do the best job and sometimes it's not the best, but I do what I can. But ultimately, like, I'm not Diane Sawyer. Like this is Real Housewives and Summer House and Southern Charm we're talking about. So like, we can take it seriously. Like this is my sports. This is my profession. I take it seriously. But also without taking it so seriously that like you lose all perspective on it and don't realize that like people like me having connections to people like that we're watching on TV is actually very natural and would be hard not to do. And I think that if I didn't have any connection to people and didn't know them, then I wouldn't be able to do my job as well personally. But also I don't recap the shows. And so I think that I joined the podcast ecosystem around Bravo fairly late. There are already amazing podcasts that exist and they still exist and they've been recapping the shows for years. That's not my game. I didn't want to get into that game. I admire it so much. And I think that those kinds of shows can operate much more independently of like having connections to the people on the shows. And also I just live in New York. So, you know, I'll go to events and I bump into people. And so I think location matters too, both in terms of other podcasters and people that I'm connected to, or even to the Bravo celebrities, like all of this comes together. That was a little bit of a rambly answer for you, but, and Kiki also and I share a lot of similarities in that. We talk about shows, we also interview them and what have you. And she's a friend of the pod. She does an excellent job of what she does on Instagram, and I love her and Dorinda together. So yeah, that's my answer to that. Last couple questions. My friend Maggie also asks, any dream guests for the podcast? What's one secret that you know you haven't shared yet? I mean, get dream guests, Andy, Nini, the big kind of pillars of our community. And I also would love to have like a big, big celebrity on here that just loves Bravo. And I could just talk about Bravo with them, you know, like a Chrissy Teigen or somebody like that who just like knows their shit, down to share some of their opinions, down to gab about Bravo. That's sort of my dream. I would love to do some of that stuff. And then one secret, I mean, I'm gonna kind of pussyfoot around this, but I have brokered peace between two Bravo celebrities who are feuding. I have. And I didn't get credit for it and I didn't need credit for it. But off camera, there was like a time there where I was really integral in having two people talk to one another again. So I'll just say that. And then lastly, non-Bravo question, but reality TV. David Van Hooser, who are you watching Big Brother this season? What is your favorite Big Brother season? So I'm a few episodes behind on the season, but I am watching. I'm really enjoying it. To be clear, I don't pay attention to the feeds, the live feeds they do. I don't really click on the hashtag very often. Like it just, I feel like it's hard to get the full story unless you're like fully in deep there. And I don't have the energy or time or sort of interest to do that. I really just go off the episodes and sort of the occasional feed clip that pops up on Twitter for me. But I'm so happy Rachel Riley is on this season and still in. I think she's done a really impressive job of like ingratiating herself with the house and like not being too obvious of a target or evading that sort of early obvious option to eliminate her right away. But I also think she's still appealing to watch. She's not afraid to stand out. She's called people out. So we're getting some of the Rachel Riley that we love, but also she's doing a good job of like not having been eliminated already. And I think it's clear she'll be around for a lot while at this point, probably, because she is an easy person to take to the end and not win. But I'm happy we're just going to have her on our TV for a while. It's been fun. I also really like Ashley. I like Will. He cracks me up. And I'm obsessed. I can't even tell you. I'm obsessed with Ava. Her head of household was iconic. Her talking to herself in the room. Her calling out Keanu, who I don't like. I love her confessional. She is one of a kind. She is a kind of an instant icon, and I hope she gets very far. I don't really like Mickey very much. I think that she's not very good at the game, and she's just, there's something about her that kind of annoys me. I don't like Riley. There's something very sinister about him, and I don't like Keanu, as I said. Those are sort of my three least favorites. And then even though some of his moments seemed like pre-planned and orchestrated and like kind of scripted out, I did appreciate Jimmy's presence in the house just because he was willing to call shit out and stand out and make a moment. Like, what frustrates me about the current sort of era of Big Brother is how scared everyone is at the beginning to like, I mean, the fact that it's even seen as like a disgrace to like vote against the majority of the house, I think it's like bullshit. Like, it's like, who dared to not vote with us? And it's like, well, I just think the group think and the inability to sort of stand out and sort of take risks at the beginning of the game is unfortunate. And so I liked his couple moments, even though, again, they did seem kind of scripted. And then historically, my favorite seasons are always when it's like about the strong standout women that make a season. Like, that's what makes a season for me. Like anything with Janelle, obviously, the one where Brittany like got fucked over by the guys in the end. I really like Brittany Haynes. Obviously, Rachel's seasons, some of the most iconic moments ever. Her and that, is the gay guy's name Reagan? That, I mean, iconic. Floaters grab a life vest, obsessed. Danielle and Evil Dick, iconic father-daughter duo. The cookout season, heaven, so fucking good. And then obviously Taylor Hale, like, come on. But yeah, it's always about the women for me, honestly. Like, that's just, that's what makes it. It's the personalities. So yeah, that's the last question for this week's listener mailbag episode. Thank you again to everybody who submitted questions. Reminder that you can submit them by following at Gabbing with Gib on Instagram. You can follow me at Gibsonoma on any social media platform. I usually post prompts there. But yeah, thanks so much for listening. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib wherever you're listening to this, if you've been liking the pod recently. And we'll be back next week with a couple great episodes. Have a great weekend. Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gib on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gibsonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and keep up with all things Gabbing with Gib at Gabbing with Gib on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gib is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.